Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film series of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome back. My name is Mary.
My name is Blake, and I wish I could be as cool, calm, and collected as Sirius is when somebody speaks to me that way that like Fred did to him.
Okay.
Oh man, if that were me, we would have big problems.
I mean, he did spend time in Azkaban, so I felt like there'd be fighting words left and right when you're filled with jail cells of terrible people. So he probably learned a lot of things about patience.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But still, regardless, I think, man, Fred came up to me like that. We'll get to it.
All right.
I'm wildly impressed by Sirius in this chapter.
Good for you.
good for you.
I applaud that you love someone in this chapter.
Not great, Bob.
All right, Marvin. Take it away.
All right, everybody. So here we are. We are in chapter 22 of The Order of the Phoenix, St. Mungo's Hospital for the Magical Maladies and Injuries. Talk about a mouthful. My goodness gracious. "Dumbledore, what news?" said Dumbledore at once. "I yelled until someone came running," said the wizard, who was mopping his brow with the curtain behind him. Friends, just visualize that. Just visualize being so sweaty that you mop your brow with a curtain. That's some serious sweat. Okay. "I yelled until someone came running," said the wizard, who was mopping his brow on the curtain behind him. "Said I'd heard something moving downstairs. They weren't sure whether to believe me, but went down to check. You know, there were no portraits down there to watch from. Anyway, they carried him up a few minutes later. He doesn't look good. He's covered in blood. I ran along to Elfrieda Craig's portrait to get a good view as they left." Not good. Great, Bob. That's
you
just, it.
You ended very abruptly.
I know. It's just they talk about a lot of people. That gets confusing. And I just
couldn't handle it.
We need to have a moment for him because he's running around so frantically, seeing blood.
Yeah. All the blood.
From the way that he said it, from his reaction, I feel like he hates blood as much as I do. Because if I saw a lot of blood and someone covered in it, I would be sweating so much that I would need to mop my face with a curtain as well.
Right.
Not a hanky.
No.
Not a little tissue. Not even Charmin can handle the amount of sweat I have when there's needles and blood around.
No amount of Charmin can take care of that.
I'm a grown woman.
The amount of stress involved. And any blood taking or any needles at all with Mary.
Oh my gosh.
It's like she was touching the nuclear codes.
Yeah.
It's that bad.
They don't believe me too when I go into these places and I'm like, just so you know, we're going to have an issue. Sometimes I need an ice pack, but I'm just going to be sweaty. I'm going to be real sweaty and nervous, maybe cry. You never know. Man. And that's what I thought of when I read this guy. I was like, not only was he running, but he's got a phobia like I do. Right. And for that, I'm proud of him.
All right, you ready to get into the show?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
"I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good."
All right, my love. We've got a mini little chapter recap for those of you who haven't read this chapter in a bit. This, of course, is the chapter where Harry gets to tell everybody about seeing Arthur Weasley get bit by himself. In snake form. It's pretty crazy.
I think that Arthur bit himself.
Oh, no. That would be interesting, too. So then Arthur has to go to St. Mungo's. Harry swooped up with all of the Weasley kids. They get to hang out at Sirius's house. And then they actually go visit Arthur in a very unique environment, St. Mungo's. And we get to hear that he's doing quite well. Quite well. And we get to learn more about the magical world and all the weird things that can go wrong to your body if you are a member of this magical world.
And of course, we get to see the inimitable Professor Lockhart again.
Yes.
Free of charge.
No, we don't get to see him yet.
Oh, we don't get to see him yet? I thought we did.
Nope. That's next, honey.
Oh, that's next.
You just read a little too far ahead.
You know what? I messed it up.
You just got so excited because he's like one of your top five.
Well, he's the best. Just the best. Like, I mean, Yeah, I would say top three characters in all of Harry Potter.
Something else that is the best is actually a sponsor for this episode, and I just wanted to do a brief little word for them
because they
have been rocking my socks, and I wanted to make sure that all of our listeners were well aware of this amazing group. All right. We're a mom and pop podcast shop, right?
Yes.
We love mom and pop anything. Coffee shops, muffin shops. And when it comes to games, our family is all in because our family loves playing games together. So there's this mom and pop game shop, dndadventureclub.com. A mom and dad, their child, who is about our kid's age, showed interest in Dungeons and Dragons, which is generally more of like an older teenager, adult game. And they decided to come up with a more simple to play but beautifully crafted world building experience that can be done in approximately like an hour or so, which is great if you're beginning, whether you're young or old. So we got to try out the D&D Adventure Club games ourselves, and we loved it, right, Blake?
Yeah, couldn't get enough of it. I was always, I played it as a kid, like I've said many times, and I was, but you know, as an adult, I was like super intimidated by it because it, like, there's a lot. And as a kid, you just go off and do whatever. But this is great because it helps condense D&D, what that looks like and what that is for your child. And it just makes it more accessible.
And it's really well done. It's beautifully crafted. They have amazing stories. So if you go to dndadventureclub.com, you can either shop or you can actually do a subscription where they get new games sent to them every single month. Either or, we have a coupon code for you. Mary20 at checkout. M-A-R-Y-2-0 at checkout. dndadventureclub.com. I'm telling you, it's awesome.
All right, Marvin. So let's get right into this because we do have a fairly limited amount of time today. So I just want to get in.
Let's do it.
And I want to bring back up Sirius just because he's my favorite in this chapter. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great things here with Sirius. First is that Fred comes at him pretty hard when he's like, well, you're not risking your neck, right? You're just here. What are you doing? And the fact that Sirius is able to like comport himself and just speak to him very calmly and rationally and be like, you guys don't understand. There are things that are worth dying for here. There are things that are beyond us. And this is why you're not ready to be in the order. And it's okay, but you need to take a step back. And the fact of the matter is, too, that he's been sitting there at 12 Grimmauld Place alone. Mm-hmm. He smells of booze, and he's clearly disheveled.
Yeah.
And like, going from that to, like, getting his adult face on and saying, nope, we're good. Like, just chill, calm down. I find that amazing. Especially also knowing, too, that a few chapters ago, he himself was acting somewhat of like an emotionally stunted teenager talking to Harry about being like, hey, your father would have done this with me and it would have been fine. So having that momentum with Sirius go back and forth is such a great thing from the author, allowing us to experience that flow of emotions with him and seeing Sirius in multiple lights that aren't just Godfather or aren't just emotionally stunted guy. He's able to move back and forth. I'm sensing, Mary, that there's some hesitancy from you on this.
Yeah.
And I would love to know why.
All right, I'll be real with you. I think that Sirius Black is emotionally stunted.
Yes.
Not his fault. Once again, tossed into Azkaban in his young adult life, blamed for murders of his best friends. So I appreciate that he may not necessarily be the most healthy-minded person.
Okay.
I think what's happened is Sirius has had little conversations in his own head. Mm-hmm. Or potentially even had conversations with Creature. You know when you're about to go to a family, like Easter's coming up. You know when you have those family dinners and you know that you're going to be seeing that person who still brings up politics or still brings up COVID or still brings up something that you really shouldn't be bringing up while you're cracking open Easter eggs, okay? Let's just leave that. So I feel like Sirius is what some people do. And you prep the conversations and you prep your zingers. Okay? Because I could see Creature being like, oh, Master doesn't leave the house.
No!
Noble House of Black, but not for you. So I feel like he's used this line. Because in my heart, I don't think Sirius really feels this way. Because what are you doing?
Well, why don't you think he feels that way? I would say that he does.
There are things... What do you mean?
That are worth dying for.
Oh,
in
no,
the
I think there's things worth dying for, but I don't think he needed to like snap like this at the kids because, yeah, he is just hanging around the house.
Yeah.
So I feel that's what I mean is that like, oh, okay, now I understand what you're saying about the.
There you go.
I just thought you were like, why is he getting at a kid?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, because he's mad. Why don't you go out? Because I can't. All right, now I'm understanding. Yes, there are things worth
how to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
I'm listening.
You just misinterpreted.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Apologies, Blake.
I've been dying to play that sound for a while, so
okay,
I'm looking for any opportunity.
I'm glad. But in the whole fact, like, this is why you're not in the order. You don't get it. That kind of attitude. I feel like most of the Weasleys would not see anything worth dying for because they would leave their family. But I feel like this has been Harry Potter from day one.
Sure.
So I appreciate it. I just feel like Sirius came out of it hard. This is why you're not in the order. You don't get it.
He came out of the... Well, I don't think he came out of the gate hard. I just think that he... I think he came out of the gate, like, calm. And then it slowly built.
Okay.
And how is it? It would be hard to not let it build, right?
But also, he doesn't have any family left. There's no one that he cares about except for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah.
Like, if Arthur Weasley died, would it really keep Sirius Black up at night? Probably not.
Yeah. Yep.
So to him, to kind of say there's things worth dying for, I can see all of the Weasleys saying, yeah, I choose life.
Yep.
I choose life. Hard pass. I want to be here with my family. And I think that in that way, too, it's easy for Sirius Black to say. I think if it was someone who did have a family, if it was Arthur who could kind of say it, I think it would have a bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more.
Yes, to it for me.
Sirius adjacent, Mary. Sirius adjacent is Creature.
Love.
And
love me some Creature.
I love that as you're reading this for the first time, you don't think much of it. But red flags, alarms, the lights, all of it should be just going bananas right now. And this is great because this is foreshadowing, right, for what's to come.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think a lot of people get confused about foreshadowing and what it is. You know, if, for example, if someone says, oh, storm's coming tonight, that's not foreshadowing. That's just you're teasing, right? And then you're obligated to pay that tease off later on with a storm. But this, like my favorite bit, I know I've said this example many times now in Mary and Blake Media history, but my favorite example of foreshadowing is in Jurassic Park. When Alan Grant gets in the helicopter and he can't buckle himself
because
he's got two female ends for the belts, and what does he do? He ties it together and he makes it work, right? So that foreshadows how the dinosaurs are able to come together and procreate, but also it foreshadows like
dino DNA.
It also foreshadows the fact that Jurassic Park. Yeah, they spared no expense, but they can't get their freaking helicopter right with the buckles. And that just shows you trouble is afoot. And what's happening with Creature here, trouble is afoot. And I would love to know your thoughts on
that. No, I agree. I mean, it's the first thing you have, you know, the rush of wind, the swirl of colors. His feet hit the ground so hard his knees buckled. The kettle clattered to the ground, and somewhere close at hand, a voice said, "Back again, the blood traitor brats. Is it true their father's dying?" That is the first thing he hears as soon as he's back. And Creature knows what's up.
Oh, sure.
And as they start to come down, they scramble. All the kids are like, Harry, what's going on? Yeah, I want to know. He hears Creature's feet step outside and just stop. Because Creature wants to know.
Yeah, of course.
He doesn't have extendable ears. I mean, he probably snagged some. Oh. That little thief. You know he's got everything.
Guaranteed.
But he's standing outside because he wants to listen to all of this as well. He may not necessarily care about the well-being of Arthur Weasley, but you know that Creature is here for the reality TV show, which is Sirius Black, Harry Potter's life. He is glued to it like people are glued to Love is Blind.
The real house, the real house wizards of Grimmauld
yes,
Place.
Yes, Creature is here to eat it all up because he knows something you don't know. He's got the receipts, as Nick Lachey would say.
Oh, all show the, us receipts. The receipts. Oh, do you think he would have that scene too, like there was in the reunion where there'd be text messages?
Yes.
And they would read it one by one?
Little did you know, R.A.B. had the locket all along.
Did you or did you not send this text?
All right.
I just, as a quick aside, I know our younger listeners probably don't know this, but that whole sequence in Love is Blind, the reunion.
Season 6 reunion.
The season 6 reunion. Oh, savage. Savage.
I appreciate
it. Oh, brutal. All right. Sorry. So going from there, Mary.
Wait, first off, we need to stop at the fact that the knocker on Dumbledore's office is a griffin.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a griffin door.
Door. Oh, man.
What?
You know what, Mary?
Attention to detail.
You know what?
I
think I'm going to give that this. I mean, can you get any more favoritism?
Do people switch out the knockers, or did Godric Gryffindor put it there as the first head of school, and he was like, this stays?
I don't
Good
know.
Good luck, everybody else.
But the fact is that you have a griffin on your door, it'd be, like, you might as, I don't know, I just... You know what? Little in your face.
Yeah.
A little bit of favoritism there.
It's all good.
No wonder why Gryffindor gets 150 points for the fun of it. For funsies.
For funsies. When you've got that going on. Lots of things happen inside this office. He comes on in. He's been talking to all the portraits. Yeah. Harry thinks there's like a massive discussion going on. It's literally just Dumbledore there. And all the portraits pretend to be sleeping.
Right.
But right away, McGonagall takes this seriously. And Dumbledore takes this seriously, and he knows the questions to ask.
Sure.
Where were you? Were you looking above? How was it? He knows, and he's not looking at Harry. It's clearly written, like, Dumbledore asks the questions, and he's looking at Ron.
Yeah.
How did you see this? You're like, what is going on? And he gets to, he tells Fox to be a warning bell, so we get to really see some of the cool stuff that Fox gets to do at this moment.
Yeah.
I think that this, you know, this is when he's telling her, please keep an eye out for Umbridge, because she comes in, warns him again later.
Yep.
Fox is then also used to bring a letter from Molly Weasley in this chapter. However, Fox doesn't do her dang job.
No. Why would she?
Go cry on Arthur Weasley. We know your healing tears could have solved this problem, Fox.
Instead, you're just leaving feathers around.
You're just being an owl. I'm not an owl. You're a phoenix.
You're such an owl.
Go
right now.
Cry.
Oh, here's a feather.
He's a Gryffindor too. Like, if it was tied to having, why is Fox not just sent to go cry on Arthur Weasley?
Yeah, good point. No. Do me a favor. Tell me when Umbridge is coming.
Yeah, that's and go deliver Molly's note.
Hey, come on, man. Come on. What are we doing? You know what? That is what. Again, I think that's one of those things where the author gets herself in trouble when, you know, she needs it for the Chamber of Secrets. Great, love it. Love that for you. However, when something like this comes up, she's written into a bit of a corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for someone like you, Mary, who is reading it going, why don't we just have Fox Tears
easy
come
button.
Over here? Like, yeah, it is the easy button.
She cried on the basilisk
right?
wound.
Yeah.
You know that she could probably fix a Nagini wound.
Yeah, like who can't, like, Nagini, yeah, the venom inside of it is making the wound stay
it's
open.
Different.
Sure,
yes.
Sure. But if you can fix basilisk venom, I'm
sure.
Do your
job.
Yeah.
Do your job.
Do
Fox.
Your job.
Oh,
do your job.
My.
That should be our new shirt. Just a picture of Fox. It just says, do your job.
So, not so fun fact, the author had actually planned on Arthur dying by this wound.
Yeah.
And changed it to be Lupin and Tonks eventually to kind of get rid of parent kind of figures in a different way. That would have completely changed. Mind you, it's almost Christmas. Okay?
Yeah.
Christmas is coming up. So that would have changed the entire dynamic of this book and also changed, you know, how we would feel about Sirius and how the Weasleys kind of attack everything. So I'm really grateful that Arthur Weasley did not die.
I think one of the other things too here is if Arthur did die, do you think that undercuts Sirius's death?
I do.
A little bit later on? I think so too.
We spent more time with Arthur.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit more stable. And he's so stinking sweet. Oh my God. He wants to find where the muggles are inside the hospital. So cute. No, I do. And I think that this was a right choice. Also in here, we get to see the weird things where Dumbledore is muttering in essence divided, you know, as the snake kind of swirling around.
Give me your take, Mary. Give me your take.
What?
On the essence divided. Give me your take.
Meaning that Harry's a Horcrux.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
Some of this in here.
Is this the moment that you think he discovers, oh yeah, no, Harry is a Horcrux? Like, maybe he's had his thoughts beforehand, but this confirms it. What do you think?
Yes. Sure. I mean, why not? Let's just go for it. If not book four, when he first had his visions of what was going on. You know, in the beginning of book four. So, but yeah, I'm here for that. I'm here for the essence. I don't know if it's 100% confirmed.
But yeah, but you have the two, you have the snake, it's divided, essence divided. Yeah. Like, that is, I mean knowing the end.
He's saying it to himself.
Yeah. Knowing the end, I feel like that's the first real textual evidence of like, oh yeah, there's a thing here.
But I also think back when Quirrell was trying to touch Harry and he couldn't, that would have been a key takeaway too.
Yeah, but
there's,
I think that's
been
a little,
signs all
that's
along.
A little, no, I agree. And that's why I'm saying, I think there's room for interpretation there, but I think this is the first moment where you can definitely, as a reader, confirm that Dumbledore has an idea, like, or not even an idea, but like, I think is pretty much sold here on the fact that Harry's a Horcrux. The essence divided thing, I think that is that is what tips you off.
But as readers, we've never even been introduced to the word Horcrux yet. So it's different. It's different for us when you're reading it the first time.
Yeah, and I liked this little bit here. The words seemed to reverberate in the air after he had said them, sounding slightly ridiculous, even comic. There was a pause in which Dumbledore leaned back and stared meditatively at the ceiling. Ron looked from Harry to Dumbledore, white-faced and shocked. "How did you see this?" Dumbledore asked quietly, still not looking at Harry. By the way, love the calmness. Mm-hmm. Love all of that. "Well, I don't know," said Harry rather angrily. "What did it matter? Inside my head, I suppose." "You misunderstand me," said Dumbledore, still in the same calm tone. "I mean, can you remember? Where were you positioned as you watched this attack happen? Were you perhaps standing beside the victim or else looking down on the scene from above?" This was such a curious question that Harry gaped at Dumbledore. It was almost as though he knew. I love this. Again, because there's a certain calmness. If this was like Goblet of Fire, "Where were you?"
You just startled Butterbeer.
I did. There's a certain calmness about this, and there's a very distinct line of logic that is being used here, something that Harry just cannot see, and that is, no, you misunderstand. Where were you? Like, I just, that to me is Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is all, like, calm, all-knowing relatively, but experienced enough to make distinctions that other people can't.
Yeah, I agree. You know who's not calm? Arthur Weasley.
Why would you?
Just to put it in perspective, not only did Nagini bite him a lot, Snape dies from Nagini's bite.
Oh, yeah.
Within like minutes.
Sure.
You know, he cries his little tears, you know, take them. So that's how powerful her poison truly is.
Sure.
Okay. Where did Nagini go? She's giant. Can she apparate? What are we doing? How'd you get there?
Well, she can apparate because we've seen.
Can you apparate in the ministry?
We saw it in the theater. She can apparate.
Yeah, I don't know how this snake gets around. However, the port key inside Hogwarts also makes for a fun little loophole because you're not supposed to be able to apparate or anything like that. But now there's port. You know, we have a port key inside Hogwarts. So we get to Sirius's house, have these conversations, and then of course we get to St. Mungo's.
Well, hold on. Oh. Before we do that, I also want to call out this bit of writing from the author. This was, when I read it, I said, yes, like this is, ooh, this is why this book rules. Okay. Like this is perfect. Ready?
Yes.
You've all used a portkey before, asked Dumbledore, and then they each nodded, reaching out to touch some part of the blackened kettle. Good. On the count of three. Then, one, two. It happened in a fraction of a second. In the infinitesimal pause before Dumbledore said three, Harry looked up at him. They were very close together, and Dumbledore's clear blue gaze moved from the portkey to Harry's face. At once, Harry's scar burned with white hot, as though the old wound had burst open again. An unbidden, unwanted, but terrifyingly strong, there rose within Harry a hatred so powerful, he felt for that instant he would like nothing better than to strike, to bite, to sink his fangs into the man before him. Three. Oh, oh! You know what?
You're gonna do it again.
I have to do it again. This is why this book rules, because Harry is just going through so much, and there's so much happening to him that he doesn't even realize. Mm-hmm. It has these urges, And again, I think it kind of ties back to what we were talking about, Mary, last episode, which is where does Voldemort begin and Harry end, or vice versa?
Yeah.
And especially knowing the ending of this chapter, it's such a great way into what's going to happen in the end of this book. Like, I love this book so much. Sorry, go ahead.
I know you do. Well, I'm excited because Harry gets to spend this time with the Weasleys. He has a lot of conflicting feelings about it. He doesn't know if they're going to be blaming him. And in the beginning, of course, what we see in this chapter, at least, is that they're just so grateful for him. They're grateful that he saved Arthur's life, that he was aware of it. Still not fully understanding how it happened, of course. And now they're going to be spending Christmas with Sirius, which was something that Harry was super worried about in the previous chapter.
Yeah.
So they're going to be having a Merry Christmas there after all. And then they make their way to Purge and Douse Limited. A red brick department store, large, old-fashioned. It had shabby, miserable air. The windows displayed a few chipped dummies with their wigs askew, standing at random and modeling fashions at least 10 years out of date. This, knowing that this is actually the magical entrance for St. Mungo's, is going to make me look at old, weird shops that you're wondering, how is this still here?
Right.
Nobody's shops here. It's always closed. How do they pay rent? How is it still here? It's going to make me look at it differently. I'm not going to think it's wizard fronts for any of those vacant stores. Not vacant, but like old dungy stuff that nobody ever goes into.
Sure, sure.
They go on in, and this is where the author really does phenomenal job world building. She's able to explain the different levels and the different things that could go wrong with the wizarding community, talking about how what we know as doctors here in the Muggle world are actually healers.
Great
there.
Distinction.
So many different things. We get to see someone whose shoes are being eaten off of them. And we also get a fun little person coming in to go see Bodrick Bode, who we're going to be hearing from in a little bit. We actually met him at the Quidditch World Cup. So just keep that name in there, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of different people. And I love when the author does this. She sprinkles in things where it's like, this is important, this isn't important, but it's kind of just in a shuffle of shoe-eating people and Arthur Weasley and getting all these people in that you blink and you miss it, but we're going to come back to that because it is important in subsequent chapters. I just love when you find these little things as someone who has read the series, and you get to go back and be like, oh, look at those little connections.
And she does this great thing. Like this portion reminded me of when Harry was looking at that list of books for the first time in book one, where he's like, okay, it's the history of Hogwarts with and all the different author names and whatever.
Yeah.
The wit and the I would say kind of a sense of humor from the author in listing off all of these things as they're entering St. Mungo's and she's building this world out is a great example again of her ability to give texture to the world. Not just this is a hospital, but they call it healers. But it's just like there are things that she can describe that give you a sense of silliness almost, but enough seriousness where you're like, Oh, no, no. This is a legit thing.
I mean, there's cauldron explosions, wand backfiring, broom crashes, bites, stings, burns, embedded spines, contagious maladies, dragon pox, vanishing sickness. I mean, how do you find somebody who has vanishing sickness? Rashes, regurgitation, uncontrollable giggling happen so frequently that it needs to be on the sign. Unliftable jinxes, hexes, incorrectly applied charms. And then if you don't know where you're going, or if you can't even speak, you get to go talk to the welcome witch.
And again, the welcome witch. Uncontrollable giggling. Yes. Again, little silly things, but put in a context of serious maladies, mm-hmm. if you will. You get a texture of what this world can be, where it can go wrong, and how it can go wrong, mm-hmm. without actually having to experience them. Right? Great stuff.
We get to go meet Arthur, and he's sharing a room. One of them is a guy who was bitten by a werewolf. And what was really interesting was Molly's reaction, where she was nervous. Is he safe in a public ward? Shouldn't he be in a private room? And Mr. Weasley reminds her quietly, it's 2 weeks till the full moon, and I talked with him a little bit how I have a friend who's made it through. And it was a very interesting reaction. We see this sometimes with Ron, and now we're seeing it with Molly, where it's like kind of those old school feelings of magical creatures and other beings not necessarily being safe mm-hmm. around wizards, and yet Lupin is one of their best friends. So I thought right. It was really interesting that Molly had that knee-jerk reaction, and it's Arthur who's saying, like, it's cool, girl. It's yeah. totally fine.
Sure.
And he's talking about the prophet, talking about Willie Widdershins, who we had heard a little bit more about. Once again, just kind of building this world so that we're hearing things or not hearing things. And then the kids go outside, but they have their extendable ears.
Oh, great stuff. And the fact that they get a chance to learn that Voldemort might be possessing Harry at this point in turn. That is not the way you want your kids to find out. And that might be... That might be enough reasoning for the adults to come out and say, this is what's happening, ladies and gents. Like, this might be enough of a reason for us as readers to say, why don't you just communicate? As a parent, as someone who is in charge of children, mm-hmm. would you be honest in this situation, Mary?
I would say we don't know enough information just yet, and I would hopefully have the wherewithal not to be talking about it in a public hospital. Plus, why is Mad-Eye Moody's eye not working? I know he was wearing a hat on top of it, but couldn't you see the kids behind the door with their extendable ears? Come on.
Well, again,
do your job, just like Fox.
Again, we get into those situations where it's great when you need it, yes. but all of a sudden things change, and these little magical items.
So no, Blake, I actually would not be telling the children right now what I thought was going on in this exact moment. They were right. just afraid I was going to die. I would totally be pulling an Arthur Weasley talking about Willie and the werewolf and all these other things and just being grateful that I'm alive. They have not had full, deep communication with Dumbledore yet. Yeah. They haven't gotten the complete story from Harry. It's just been all a jumbled up mess. And let's be real. It's going to make people see him in a different way.
Sure. But I can't help but think, and I guess this is the crux of most stories that, you know, we all watch or read. If people just talked and communicated, half of these issues wouldn't exist.
Okay, but here's the problem. They don't know what to communicate about yet. They don't know the full story. All the questions I'm asking right now would have been asked. Why didn't Fox come here? How'd the snake get in? How'd the snake get out? What... Just too many things. Too many things. Too many variables. And I would tell the kids, listen, we'll talk about this soon.
Sure.
Let's just be present in the moment that thank God Dad's alive, right?
Yeah.
We're going to hang out. We're going to digest this. Because too many cooks in the kitchen cause chaos. And Lord knows Harry Potter doesn't always listen, okay? He's just going for it. He just goes after it all the time. So Harry, in my opinion, has not necessarily shown himself to be trustworthy enough to be patient and to digest information. Dumbledore is too patient, but we're talking about 14, 15, 16-year-olds.
Yeah, Mary, it kind of reminds me what you said about too many questions. It reminds me of Lost when they were like, hold on.
We have to go back, Kate.
When they were like, listen, what if you answer one question, that answer breeds two more questions.
Yes.
And it's inevitable.
Yes.
And that's a fair assessment. But the problem I think, though, that I have is that, and maybe it's, no, I know it's the purpose, but because Dumbledore doesn't know enough, he's not looking at Harry. And I find this situation with Harry and the loneliness and the disconnection and feeling isolated fascinating throughout this book, because it was the very last chapter, right? The very last chapter where Harry finally felt seen. It was Minerva saying, no, that's real. And the Thestrals, and Hagrid, no, those are real. And at the same time, we have two people validating Harry, Minerva and Hagrid. The next chapter, we have two people kind of invalidating Harry. One is Sirius. Yes, he is there for support. Yes, he has this connection. There's this great moment where is it? I got it right here. Come on. I have it written down. Oh, I don't have it here. Oh, here it is. Fred fell into a doze, his head sagging sideways into his shoulder. Ginny was curled like a cat on her chair, but her eyes were open. Harry could see them reflecting the firelight. Ron was sitting with his head in his hands. Whether awake or asleep, it was impossible to tell. And he and Sirius looked at each other every so often, intruders upon the family grief, waiting, waiting. And it's so great because here he does feel validated by Sirius. Yet at the same time, Harry is so concerned. Well, it is concerning that Sirius just kind of plays off all of the stuff. Like, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. We're going to be fine. Everything's fine. That is an isolating moment for Harry because he was a snake who just bit this dude.
Not fine.
And at the same time, we have Dumbledore, who's not even still looking at Harry, once again creating that isolationist feeling, creating that feeling of like unease and nobody's paying attention to me, being invalidated. So I think I find it fascinating that we have two people validating him last chapter, and then two people in the second chapter, the next chapter, doing the exact opposite. It's a perfect push and pull of tension for Harry and what he's going through through characters that he trusts implicitly. Great stuff.
I agree, Blake. Look at that depth. No wonder Harry's got all the feels right now.
All right, Mavi, you got anything else that you want to talk about in this chapter?
Man.
All right. Well, because we do have a little bit of a hard out here, ladies and gents, I know I promised it last episode, but we are going to have to wait again for the listener feedback. And I think, do you want to wait too for the
different perspective?
Different perspective?
I tried to do a little creature in the beginning.
Fair
Maybe
enough.
That counts.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Mavin, let's close it out, shall we?
We shall, Mavin.
All right, let's do it.
We want to thank you all so very much for hanging out in this most magical series with us. Don't forget to share this podcast with a friend. Share it online in stories. Sharing is caring, and people best learn about podcasts through word of mouth. So if this podcast brings Lumos in your time of Knox, share it with some friends. You can also send us an email, maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. And you can always leave a voicemail by going to maryandblake.com. Click the upper right-hand corner where it says contact us. And you can actually record a voicemail if you too have something that you would like to share and you can get on the podcast.
Another thing that we do in here too is join the nerdclan.com, where we're getting a whole bunch of extra good stuff for that community. Just a bunch of nerds freaking out, loving on the things that they love, whether it is The Crown, or I'm doing knee-jerk reactions to Shogun right now, and I will be doing one for Manhunt starring Tobias Menzies for all you Outlander nerds. We got a lot of good stuff coming, so I'm excited about that.
All right, my friends, thank you so much. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.